Greetings to you, friends. It is I, Dee Trussell, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Now, I know a lot of us are pissed at the algorithm all the time. The algorithm sometimes seems like a demonic force. For example, the first time I went onto TikTok, it just decided that I wanted to see pimple popping videos. And it was weirdly right. Like, I didn't know that's what I wanted. I went on there because I wanted to look at beautiful women in Tulum giving me advice about how to live a better life. But pretty soon it just started suggesting hardcore pimple popping clips, sprays of pus and big explosions of blistered pox from the backs and faces of people I'll never meet. And though I did enjoy those videos, I really wanted it to just show me women in thongs talking about how I can be a better dad. To make a long story short, I was on Spotify and I've become so jaded by the algorithm's suggestions of music that I might like that I don't really pay attention to the playlist that it creates for me. But this time I got lucky. It suggested today's guest, Charles Wesley Godwin. And because I was on my way to the airport in the back of an Uber and was too lazy to dig around for my own music, I was like, well, fine, I'll listen to it. Let's see what it is. As it turns out, it introduced me to what has become my favorite country singer. His music is incredible. It reminds me of the first time I listened to Johnny Cash or Willie Nelson. It's just perfect. It's perfect country music, and yet it's got this modern edge to it that is really hard for me because I'm musically illiterate, basically, to understand why that is or what's going on there, but it is beautiful. And before you listen to this episode, I'd love it if you would just check out the first track from his incredible album, Family Ties, which you can find everywhere. I did not expect him to even write back to me, but I followed him on Twitter, sent him a DM, and he agreed to do my podcast, which is wonderful. Now, that being said, there is something scary when you get to have a conversation with someone whose art you really love. And so, of course, I had a little bit of trepidation here. Like, who knows? What if it turns out that he is somehow completely different than the person that you hear in his songs? And I was thrilled to find out he's exactly the same person. His music is a direct reflection of his life, which is a pretty incredible life with a really interesting story behind it. So get ready for this awesome conversation with Charles Wesley Godwin. And if you want to go see him perform live, I'll have links at duncantrussell.com. I think most of his shows are sold out, which is no surprise to me, but some of you might still be able to get tickets. And I'm going to see him in October this month. I can't wait. All right, fine. Now, some quick announcements. If you are listening to this on the 5th of October, then I'm going to be in Cobbs, San Francisco, the 6th and the 7th. I hope you will come and see me there. After that, the following weekend, I'm going to be at Helium in Philadelphia. You can find all of those ticket links at the club's website. I hope that you will come and see me live. I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. Sign up. You will get commercial-free episodes of this podcast. I try to gather the family once a week. Lately, my schedule's been a little weird with a new baby, but we shoot for once a week, a family gathering and a meditation. You'll get to meet your true family, a collective of geniuses, a collective of symmetrical, beautiful, muscular, powerful, athletic, sophisticated, scientifically minded, rational, yet mystical. Did I already say powerful? They're all incredible at basketball. Many of them are currently professional basketball players who play in various European leagues. So if that sounds like you, head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. Now, everybody, I'm pleased to introduce you to Charles Wesley Godwin. Chuck, welcome to the DTFH. It is so nice to meet you in person.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Duncan.
Your music has become like a go-to for me. I sometimes the algorithm, it just works. And I don't know how it even happened, but just served up your music. I'm listening to it on the way to the airport, your newest album. And I'm like trying to... I don't even think the Uber driver is looking at me, but I'm just like wiping tears away because it's like, you know, I'm a new dad, you're a dad, and you're this album about family. It's just you hit every single angle of like what it's like when you become a parent and how deep it gets. Did you, with this album, like how long had you been planning to write an album about family?
I've been working on this a couple years, the past couple years now, and it really started coming together when my wife was pregnant with my firstborn in 2019. That's when I wrote Gabriel for him, you know, before he was even born.
Wow.
So I kind of had that one put away, and I could kind of see where, you know, where my heart was kind of wanting to lead me with writing, and that one did not fit on what ended up being the next album. But then, you know, the way things worked, that is where everything was kind of leading me after that second album got out, was to go towards that. And honestly, I mean, the reason why is therapeutic for me. You know, I've been gone hundreds of days a year for the last 3 years. And I got, you know, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old and a wife at home. And, you know, it's just that weird time in my life where things with my work and career, you know, the iron is hot and the opportunity is here if I'm willing to work for it, to put the time in now to have, you know, that relief and that, you know, maybe that the dream schedule, you know, after a few years of hard work, you know, for the rest of my life. So, there was a big sacrifice there, and I'm missing a lot. I have missed a lot, and, you know, so this album was therapeutic for me, you know, working through shame and depression and guilt. And also the other side is just, you know, I just like anybody that has a family, I love my family with everything that I have. So it was all that kind of mixed in and songwriting's always been my outlet. So that's the piece of work I came up with.
Oh, you hear your love for your family in every song. And like anyone who loves their family, it's like that resonates with us because you're putting into words this sometimes, like if you're not a songwriter, a pretty indescribable feeling of connection. And forgive me, I have a sludge brain, so I'm not going to be able to name I'm sorry if I don't name the exact tracks.
No, you're good.
But your song about the way family is connecting you with your ancestors. Do you know what I'm talking? Which track is that?
Family
Ties. My God.
Yeah.
And that's something, there's so many things when I became a parent that I just didn't expect to happen. And that was one of them where suddenly you just somehow feel this presence or this, you realize like the countless lives that came before and how you're just, you know, one more rung on this ladder going forward into time. And so, it feels like you sing about your ancestors a lot in your songs. So can you tell me about that? Like you have a mine, it's a mining family. Is that what it is? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was a coal miner. And you know, my great grandfather, Moore, was one as well. So there's been a lot of, a lot of mining, a lot of preaching, a lot of farmers, school teachers, professors, soldiers. That's kind of the background of my family. And yeah, I like drawing, and this will change as I go and as I write more and stuff, but it's been a great well to draw from is their life experiences and the things that they've experienced, because I mean, it's pretty remarkable. It's an interesting, unique, authentic take that I can offer people, around, the world, the rest of the country, that anybody that listens to my music, that they can hear kind of these stories and songs about, generations, past generations of my family that might, they might relate to as well in their own. And like you said, where, some folks aren't able to put into words maybe the thoughts and feelings that they have about their own life, that maybe a love or a feeling that they have, or how they feel about their ancestors. Maybe my music can help connect them to that. And again, I love writing songs, so it's just I've loved getting to dive into that and kind of making something beautiful out of, like my grandparents' life, writing a song like Seneca Creek about them. And I got to take some poetic license with making it sound maybe a little bit prettier than it was, but that's the fun of it.
Well, I mean, your dad would, when he was going to work, he was going into a mountain. Like that was just into a dangerous mountain. And how what you talk about going out in the road. When I go out on the road just for a weekend and I don't have the touring musician life, it's brutal. Like the ache to see your family just for a weekend, you miss them so much. This guy, when you're FaceTiming with them or whatever, it's still like you want to be there. But what was that like having your dad leave to go perform one of the most dangerous jobs out there? Or were you aware of how dangerous it was?
My brother and I were always, my dad had two rules that my brother and I were never allowed to go down into the mines, and then he would never let us handle a chainsaw until we grew up. Is it like those are to him, chainsaws, the mines, and motorcycles were the most dangerous thing in the world, and there's a lot of wisdom to that.
Yes, there
But
is.
yeah, my dad grew up lower class. My grandfather was a preacher. My grandmother, he had six siblings, so my grandmother just, was raising, him and his brothers and sisters. So the mines were great money. He got into them in the 70s, and it was a huge, great source of income, and allowed him to save money. And him and my mom were able to elevate themselves economically, because of that. So it was a great opportunity for him on one hand, but then on the other hand, there are countless close calls, that he's told me about. And when he was my age, he was just getting out of this, but from age 27 to 30, he was working a really small coal seam that was 26 and a half inches. So that's 26 and a half inch coal. And that means from floor to ceiling. So he was crawling in 1 mile each day, crawling back out. And they weren't the person that he worked for, they weren't using roof bolts at that time too, which is completely illegal, and that would never pass today. But so anyways, he comes from a different world, and that stuff doesn't exist today, thankfully. And by the end, he ended up in the 90s, he left the mines. He'd gotten his mining engineering degree and went above ground, and he ended up being a very talented manager of manufacturing, and became one of the he became like the number one chrome plating expert in the world,
Whoa.
and worked for a different company, and he'd go around the world and kind of flip chrome shops and make them world class. So not to get too much into the weeds,
I like the weeds. That's wild, man. Those aren't weeds. That's wild. That's like going from crawling through a mine a mile to becoming like the top of an industry. That's an incredible story. Like that is beautiful.
He's very, you know, he's very talented, and when he sets his mind to something, like he graduated first in his class at mining engineering at West Virginia. So, yeah, you know, he was he definitely did well for himself, and made me very proud of him. And you know, a lot of the values and things that whether he knew he was showing my brother and I or not, a lot of that passed down to us. And you know, it's in large part probably the reason why I've been able to keep going, you know, on this path that I'm on, and didn't quit, you know, way back in the years when it looked ridiculous. And as a comedian, you know, everybody has those years where it does
Oh.
not look like you're a professional at all. And all your friends and family are like, when are you going to give this up? And
Oh my God.
you know, you got to have, there's got to be something in you that gives you that toughness to keep going. And I know anybody in entertainment has it.
Yeah, you got to have that because you can't, you know, you can't expect your mom to be like, "Oh yeah. Do like the most unpredictable, difficult job that no one succeeds at. I really want you out there in Los Angeles. Like, just like what? Doing open mics? You know?" She would always be like, "When you're ready to stop, you can come back. My friend works at a book packing warehouse and you could come pack books." It's like, "I'm not coming to pack books." I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not gonna pack books in Asheville. Like, there's gotta be some other job. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not gonna pack books in Asheville. Like, there's got to be some other job for me than that. But yeah, so you, when did you pick up music? Like, when did it start for you?
I didn't start until I was 20 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of got a late start. I picked up a guitar when I was in college to as a hobby. I watched the Avett Brothers and Bob Dylan and Mumford and Sons play at the Grammys. I was just sitting there watching on TV, and it was February 2011, and I was like, man, that would be a cool hobby to have, because
Yeah.
I'd played sports all growing up, so there I was in college, and I tried to walk on for WVU and didn't make it. I wasn't good enough to make the team, so I'm sitting there like, just with all this free time I had never had before in my life, trying to figure out what else I can get into, because hunting and fishing was kind of the only other things outside of sports that I
Right.
did. But you know, you can't do that every day when you're in college and in town
Right.
and stuff like that. So yeah, I was just kind of like in that young adult like world, you know, and just trying to figure out like what's my thing.
Yeah.
I was majoring in finance and had no reason why I was majoring in
Okay.
finance, because
Yeah.
you know, you're 18 years old, and they're like, and in West Virginia we had the Promise Scholarship, so I had really good grades, so I got to go to college for free, but I didn't know what I loved or what I wanted to do in life. So it's like, well, I'm gonna go to college because I get to go for free,
Right.
but I have no idea what I want to do. So you know, they're like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I
Finance.
don't know, like finance. I don't know. So there I am in
Finance.
college getting a free education, but not really. I almost wish I could have had 10 years to sit on that
Yeah.
scholarship and then be like, okay, I know what I want to get a degree in. But anyways, that's not the way it worked. So yeah, it started out as a hobby, and you know, I just pick it up 15 minutes a day, and you know, I wasn't trying to write songs or sing at that point. So the first year I was just trying to string some chords together,
Yeah.
and you know, it finally kind of clicked in early 2012 where I could string some chords together. So then I started learning some songs and kind of singing them to myself and just again, like having fun in the evenings. And I did a study abroad to Estonia my junior year of college. So I
Whoa.
bring my guitar over there, and I got six other flatmates that I'm living with over there. So again, I'm still kind of doing my evening routine of practicing a little bit and just playing music. And then they come in and listen to me. And that kind of made me uncomfortable because that's, you know, I never sang for people.
Right.
So, you know, like, oh, I don't want to sing for anybody. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, so I was kind of shy about that. And one night we were 3 or 4 months in over there, and there was a concert in town in Tartu. That was the town I was living in. And me and my buddies, we all go to this show, and my roommate Balam from Mexico City, he grabbed my guitar out of the room after I'd left and took it to that show.
Wow.
And so we're sitting there watching this show, and it ends, and it's like in this little club, if I remember right. It might have been maybe a 200 cap, like just a small little place. And after the show, Balam runs up on stage, and they hadn't turned the sound off. And he's like, "Charlie, come play a song." And I'm like, wow. Kind of looking around. I'm like, "Oh no." And I'm like, kind of hoping a security guy will come and like just
yeah.
pick him up and take him off the stage. But I don't even think this place had security. So that didn't happen. The sound still hadn't turned off. And then Balam convinces the whole room to start chanting, "Charlie, Charlie, Charlie." And I'm like, "Oh shit." And I'm kind of weighing it in my head. I'm like, do I wuss out? Or at this point, what's the best move here? Cause I do not want to sing, but I also don't at this point, like, you just man up and just do it, you know? So I went up and sang probably like Country Roads or something. Cause I only knew like 5 songs. And I was like shaking in my jeans, just like, this is ridiculous. But got through the song, you know, it seemed like everybody enjoyed it. I didn't wuss out. I was like, huh, you know, crisis averted, and forgot about it. And then, so that was like a Friday night. Then the next Monday, I got a Facebook message from a fashion designer there in Tartu. And she asked if I would play for her fashion show that Friday.
Whoa.
She said, she asked if I could fill 20 minutes and then she'd pay me 150 euro.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, I can do that. That's like 5 songs. That's just enough, you know?
Yeah.
So I show up to this, it's like this cafe that has a courtyard in the center of it.
Yeah.
And there are these French doors on each end. And she had like a mics and a PA set up and a sound guy there. I show up, plug in and play for 20 minutes as the models like would walk through the courtyard, and it was lined on both sides with all the people. And it ended up being a lingerie fashion show, like, funny
oh,
enough.
Oh, I'm kinda, sorry.
Kind of
weird.
How
horrible.
Like, that was my first gig, Duncan. Like, and
that's God saying you're on the right path.
I always say I peaked. Like, I'll never top that. You know, it was the first gig. So anyways, I filmed my 20 minutes, you know, probably just very, you know, very green and all. But anyways, I got through it, get paid 150 euro. And I'm like, this is the easiest work I've ever done in my life to get this much money. So from then on, I was hooked. I was like, I'm going to do this, like, without a doubt. So
yeah.
When I came back to West Virginia, I started singing bluegrass music with a couple buddies of mine that I grew up with. One picked up the banjo, other one picked up a bass. And that's kind of how it all started. And then when I decided I was going to do this for a living, I was like, well, you got to write songs. So I started writing. And then that's when I was like, I really fell in love with this, and kind of was just lucky enough to realize that this was the thing I was meant to do.
So you had, you know, the classic country music singers, they all start in Estonia at lingerie. Johnny yeah. Cash, Willie Nelson. So weird. What's it with Estonia and you guys? It's Estonia, then the lingerie show,
yeah,
then bluegrass. That is such a wild story. Do you think that if your flatmate had not brought your guitar to that show, that your life would have gone in a completely different direction?
Probably. Yeah. I think I would have gone down whatever traditional path I was headed. Who the hell knows what kind of job I'd have, whether I'd be in a cubicle or whether I'd be trying to like buy properties and flip them. Who knows what I would have gotten
yeah.
into.
Yeah.
Probably teaching history, honestly. But yeah, that changed the whole course of my life. Yeah, that changed the whole course of my life.
That's why you need good friends,
And
man. Like you
yeah.
get a good friend, there's a kind of benevolent derailment that will happen. Like if you have a good friend, they will derail your life, but in the best way possible. I was headed towards psychology. I was going to be a clinical psychologist, I guess. And then like I met this incredible musician, Emil, who was this artist, and I saw, oh my God, you can do this. This is possible. And then that was it. You know, it derailed whatever I was going to do. We're so lucky. If we have crazy friends like that. What was your friend's name again?
Balam
Balam.
Nazar.
You
Yeah.
talk to him still?
Yeah, we message on social media, every now and then. I think he's a chef at a restaurant in Singapore.
Wow,
True
that
man of the
guy.
world.
We're so lucky. Balam did that to you. Brutal
Yeah.
thing to do, by the way, but wow.
Yeah, set me down on a path, and that sounds all man tough like first gig, but then years down the line, I my dues came, and I paid them
You paid your dues.
for sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it came back on me for sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, you there, I just there's no way. You know, when I'm listening to your music and I'm trying to understand it with my sort of I'm a little musically illiterate, but I do hear Elliott Smith in your music. I hear these patterns that are like I it's just such an interesting convergence of styles that I don't think I've ever heard before. Like, when you hear it the first time, you'll think, oh, this is beautiful country music. But then when it's so detailed and it's so complex within that, so when you are working on a song, how does the song you write on paper make its way into the song we're listening to? Is that your band that's coming up with the chord progressions and the music behind it, or are you coming up with all of that and then telling
Yeah.
them what you're hearing? And
Yeah, I'm coming up with all of the so I while I'm writing, I'm playing it on the guitar as well. So I'm writing the music and the words at the same time as I'm going.
okay.
And then so I'll bring a completed song to the band, and then from that they can draw out, a melody or a lead or something from that music, because I'm not a lead player, so I can bring the chord changes and the maybe the dynamics, the ups and downs of it,
Yeah.
and then they can help emphasize that.
Okay.
And my guys do a fantastic job of doing that, and my producer Al and I work very well together. And Al's able, and even sometimes too, like he'll help on an instrumental part to make it even better. Like there's a song, Temporary Town, where, I brought in the song to him, and the instrumental was much more kind of what the verses and the chorus were. And then Al was able to take that, and he's like, well, let's cut this off, and let's add this and do these hits at the end. And it kind of made it, so much better. So that happens sometimes as well, because,
Yeah.
I'm not musically educated. I can't read music, so sometimes, my guys are, and they can help that kind of stuff happen.
Right. Yeah, the that to me, I dabble in music just for to prevent senile dementia because I did so many psychedelics my whole life. It's like I read somewhere if you work on music, maybe your brain won't stop working in your 50s. So like I'm always like trying to work on it, but I notice these like weird leaps forward musically, like I like working on the piano and struggling with whatever the thing is I'm working on, and then the next day suddenly like I can do it, or separating your left hand from your right hand, and then suddenly you can just do it. Did you notice that? Like it's like your
Oh
brain changes or something.
yeah, that happens every step of the way. Like it would, with the chords, and then playing and singing at the same time, practicing like any kind of lick or something that I'm trying to learn, it works the same way. And it was just like that in school. If you remember as a kid,
Yeah.
there'd be some concept in math that you're like, I don't understand this at all. And then
Yeah.
just one day you'd wake up and be like, oh, it kind of clicked,
Yeah.
finally, or something. That's the way it 100% works that way. Travis picking, like when I finger pick the guitar, that took tons of time for my
Yeah.
thumb to keep the bass while the other fingers would would, finger pick the melody and stuff, and then all of a sudden one day it just
Give me a
clicked, you
break. I don't
know.
know how you do that. That's Superman level stuff. Your finger picking is it's insane, man. It's like I don't understand that at all, and I never will. And by the way, that's not I don't expect to. I just like doing it. I get mad at the guitar. I can't do it, man. The B chord or the bar where you got to put your finger over it. I've given up. I've given up. I've tried. I've cut my finger. I've like it just doesn't work. And anyway, I'm not. I don't mean to be complaining. I want to ask you. And maybe it was a different. Did you record in Asheville? Did you record
Yeah.
at Echo? My podcast studio used to be there when I was
Yeah,
living
I heard
in.
you say that your mom was saying that you could like pack books there at a place in Asheville. Yeah, that's where we made the album. We made the album at Echo Mountain. You ever heard of that spot?
No, I literally my podcast studio was in on the third floor of that building. When I came to Asheville, I needed a place to do my
Oh,
podcast.
shit.
And so they were like, "Yeah, we have this office space where you could do it." And so I just set up there. Like, yeah. I
Dude, I
hung
know
out
where you're
there.
talking about. The secondary studio across the parking lot there that has like a few floors and their main office and all. I think I know where you're talking about
There's
'cause they have.
two. It's the one that doesn't have the video game machine in it. It's like one of
Yeah,
them.
it's like their studio B is
That's
on
it.
the basement of that building.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Isn't
Yeah.
that
Yeah,
crazy?
that's where we made this one. We made this whole one over in the main building.
Wow. That's such a weird synchronicity, man. What a great studio, though. Like, holy shit.
I loved it. I loved it. I never had the opportunity to record in a place that nice before. And I mean, I was just it was the best time I'd ever had creating anything. And we were there in January too, which honestly I think is the coolest time of year there because the tourism season's real slow at that point. So it's just like we had the whole downtown to ourselves. It was an incredible time.
Yo, cold though, huh? Cold. Did you get what did Asheville give you? Did you get that sludge rain or did you get like super cold?
Yeah, we got snow, but it's
Nice.
nothing compared. I'm from here in West Virginia, so we get a lot more than they do. And my guys are from up around like Beaver, Pennsylvania. So we're Asheville South to us. You know what I mean? It's
Gotcha.
not.
Yeah, it's like, oh
It
yeah,
wasn't
it's
bad. Yeah,
yeah, the tropics,
it's
Asheville.
like, oh, it's 40 degrees. This is nothing today. You know what I mean? That's.
How long did it take you? How long were you in town for recording that?
2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks.
Okay, that's cool. So you made it to the
Yeah.
Biltmore House. Did you go to the Biltmore House?
I didn't. No, I didn't this
What?
time, but I got to do that sometime. I'm going to take my
No, you
kids there
don't.
for
Don't
sure.
follow. Well, maybe with your kids, but the
Yeah, I
kids
think they'd
are.
be cool.
How old are your kids again?
3 and 1. And, I know my son would love it right now. And, my daughter in a year or so would enjoy that too. But yeah,
Yeah,
we didn't get to really see any sights. We were working like every day.
it's a wild place, man. I mean, like Asheville's fascinating. There's a lot of interesting stuff going out on, like in the outskirts. Like we just gotten it. We left LA during the pandemic, and we were freaking traumatized, man. I've never seen anything like that happen. I've heard about it happening. Like I've one of a girl I knew a while ago, her mom was there during the Iranian Revolution, and it was creepy what she said to me. Her mom always told her, "You have to understand how quickly things can change. Like how quickly there it doesn't happen. There's not time to get out of there sometimes." And I'm not saying it was like I'm sorry comparing like pandemic LA to Iran. But it was maybe better in Iran. You know what I mean? Seeing this beautiful city just collapse, boarded up, shanty towns appearing everywhere, everyone losing their minds. So we are freaked, man. And we went up to Asheville, and we're like, we're gonna get a compound. We're gonna grow our own food. We're never gonna put ourselves in that situation ever again. I don't know how to grow food. I know my wife doesn't. I don't know how to hunt. I don't know what you're thinking, dude. I can barely like make food, much less grow it. So anyway, I wanted to take my kid into nature. So I took him up to Pisgah National Forest, 5 a.m. because there's a waterfall I heard about. No joke. completely dark, headlights on, driving down this long gravel road. There's a druid, a guy in with robes, monk robes, a yeah. massive staff. You know, anywhere that's going to be interesting, but it like in the dark in a national forest.
Yeah.
It's like, what it's like, is this?
I'm picturing, what was the M. Night Shyamalan movie where it's like the town that was like isolated from the world?
Exactly.
What was that movie? But that's what I'm picturing.
I know
right
exactly
now.
What you're talking about. Just that.
Yeah.
You know how it is. I don't know. Like, with your sons, you know, you can't show fear, right? Even yeah. though I'm like, they're okay, yeah, great. It's yeah. like a forest wizard. I know how far I've driven out here. He's in sandals walking with a, so I also, this waterfall I was trying to get to, I didn't know how to get there. So I just rolled down my window and was like, can you tell me how to get to this waterfall? And he was the nicest guy ever. He's like, you shouldn't take yeah. a toddler to that waterfall. It's a terrible hike. He looked at my kid. He's like, don't do it. I'm like, I'm going to do it. And then on the way back from that awful hike, that was the first time Forrest slapped me in the face. He's like, why did you do this to me? He was.
how old was your kiddo?
He was like, I think he was 2 at the time, maybe 1.5. And like, you know, like I'm carrying him out of there. Like he stepped on a mine.
Yeah.
He's not walking yeah. through this anymore. And then he just looked at me, slaps me in the face and laughs.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a 4-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
He's not walking yeah. through this anymore. And then he just looked at me, slaps me in the face and laughs. It's the best. So let me ask you, have you discovered any tricks to mitigate the touring guilt, to like, to find balance in what is a fair, pretty non-ordinary life? You know, it's, How do you work with it? How do you explain it to your kids? And or do you just always kind of feel sort of bad about being away from them?
Yeah, I mean, there's no trick for the guilt at all. The only thing is, as things get better, the schedule gets better. So even this year, you know, a lot of this year besides August and September were crazy. So I was only home a handful of days out of those 2 months total, but for most of this year it's been like working a week or two and then taking a week or two off, and right. that's been drastically better than the last couple of years. And then hopefully, you know, we get to that point where I can get my guys on salary and only have to play maybe 30 to 50 times a year. So that's kind of what I'm shooting for. And then, you know, in the long run that'll be, you know, way better than not sacrificing in these years I'm in now and just having to grind for the rest of my life if I'm going to continue to do this.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not really any secrets. I do have one rule. It's a 24-hour rule. So no matter where I'm at, if it means, you know, if I could take a flight or whatever it may be to, and I can have 24 hours at home, it's worth it.
That's great.
So even if I'm in Seattle and, you know, there's 2 days between shows or something, if it means I can have 24 hours at the house with the family, then there I am flying across the country to get it. So
that's great.
That adds up throughout the year though, you know, where, you know, especially last year, I probably got 14 days total that I would, you know, most folks wouldn't have just because they wouldn't be willing to do the travel. So
yeah.
that's a rule that I have, and it's seems to do okay. You
that's
know?
A communication too, man. That's like telling, that's showing them through action how much you love them. That's not bullshit. That's like, that's real. And it's a demonstrating that, that you're prioritizing them. I mean, I don't know if this is comforting, but sometimes I think I try to remember experiences with my dad before like the age of five, and I can't remember anything. You know what I mean? Like, so when I'm trying to make myself feel better, I'm like, you just were into your mom. Most kids are just into their mom. Like, the dad is there. He's fun. He's cool. But I think maybe that's kind of the problem. I think maybe that's a problem in the world, is that, you know, the balance of the family, it gets a little wobbly these days. I mean, this is another thing that I loved about your album, is just, you know, these days, people look down on the family, kind of. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to do some weird, like, Fox News talking point. I just mean, like, and I did too when I was like a young 20-year-old acid head liberal arts student. You know, I would like turn my nose up. Oh, really? The family values. Oh, really? No, I found a new way forward. It's reading existentialism, taking psychedelics, and feigning superiority over the core, the nucleus of society, being like, oh, whatever those things are over there that are keeping everything going, allowing me the ability to enjoy like a freewheeling weird life. So that's something I felt was really beautiful about what you put out there, is like, I feel like it's an affirmation of the most important structure in society, and contextually in a time where that's being diminished in different ways, you know. And can you talk about that a little bit? Did you feel any hesitation about doing it? Did you, or you just knew it was the right thing?
I know exactly what you mean by that. And as far as I've always done exactly what I wanted to do, you know, creatively, and it's maybe made me not the most commercial, not as commercially successful as maybe I could be. But then on the other hand, though, it's given me a lot of respect in the industry, being this guy from West Virginia that's never moved to one of the major cities to make it happen, and who, you know, I write all my songs, and if, you know, my first album that's going to be on one of the bigger labels, you know, that exists in country music, is going to be all about family, you know, it's just what my heart kind of guided me to do. But I understood the whole time that this is not exactly the formula to success, you know. And I know a lot of folks try to hide the fact that maybe they have a family, or, you know, they say, oh, I want to keep it private or something like that. But then, but even in their art, they're also covering that up, I guess. And so I always thought it was kind of strange. I never want to be that guy that's like a grown up trying to sing songs about like the lifestyle of a single 21-year-old in college.
Right.
So, but, you know, I don't know what exactly I'm trying to say here. All I did with this album was just do what I felt like I needed to do, because I was coming out of a really dark place in my life in 2021, just to put like some background to what was happening. You know, I was independent coming out of the pandemic, and the pandemic cut the legs out from me, as far as like my work life went. Yeah. I just released my first album in 2019.
Right.
And it took about a year to get booking and management. So 2020 was shaping up to be really the first year that I was going to actually tour properly. Right. Shows that I hadn't booked myself, and like have an opportunity to grow and try to, you know, try to make this thing happen. And then, you know, pandemic happened. I come home from Europe March 2nd from a 6-week European tour I'd done. And then March 13th, everything for the rest of the year just got, you know, gets pretty much wiped out. So in spring of 21, I start kind of getting back at it as soon as venues would open up and start having shows. And I start taking my band out with me in July of 21. And I had this new album that we recorded over the pandemic, which, you know, How the Mighty Fall, the whole theme of that album was about mortality. Because I don't know, and you kind of mentioned this when you're talking about, like, when your child was born, feeling the connection to your ancestors for the first time.
Yeah.
And I felt that too. When my son was born, I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this, things are moving along here. And in your 20s, and I was 27 when Gabriel was born. So, you know, prior to that point, you just, you're like, you know that you're going to die someday, but it seems so far away.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't really think about it. Like, you're like, oh, it's just so far away.
So far away.
But when you see your child just coming into the world there in that moment, you're like, okay, this wheel is turning. I get, like, I see what's happening here. And this is moving way faster than you think it is, Charles. So that whole second album was about, like, the theme of it was mortality and things like that. So back to the summer of 21. Going out with my band, and we're opening for people making $250 a night, and I have a 7-piece band with me and a photographer and videographer.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Holy shit! How do you split that up?
Well,
that's rough.
What happened was I gave them everything, and then I was eating all the money I was losing as well from money I'd saved up, you know, throughout the year prior, trying to bridge that moment in time to when that album came out in the fall, hoping it would work out. And that put me under a ton of stress. I mean, I was losing sleep, like probably 50% of nights I was waking up at 1 or 2 just from the stress that year and just not going back to sleep. And, so I almost went under in September, and we were able to, the pre-sales for the album were the next week. And I explained to my guys, you know, what was going on, and they were cool about it. And were able to, they're like, we'll wait, you know, and then the pre-sales happened. Then I was able to keep paying them, and we ended up making it through, and the album came out in November, and it did great as far as independent albums go.
Yeah.
So there I am, like, I'm like, okay, like, we made it. But I hadn't written a word in almost half a year just because of all the stress from it. And then about a week after the second album came out, labels kind of came into the picture. And I started having my first meetings with these music labels. And they're like, so what do you got? We want to hear what you're working on. And I'm like, I don't know. I got 2 albums
you can listen
to and decide whether or not you like me or not. You know what I mean? It just put me in this weird headspace that I'd never been in before, where I'd just come out of this, like, this crucible. Yeah. And then on the other end, I got these folks that are kind of wanting to cherry pick my work and just not, I don't know. I took it as doubt. And then I have these guys that had all quit their jobs, and, like, they'd gone all in on me to, like, let's do this. We believe in you. So, like, so I have these guys that I'm trying to provide a living for, and then labels that want to see what I'm working on before they decide whether or not they want to work with me. And it just kind of put all this new pressure on me that I'd never had, because before I'd always just written freely. And I didn't have any, the only one that was relying upon me was me, because my wife worked full time. So it's not like, not even, you know, our family wasn't completely dependent upon me. So that, like, put me in this funk that went on until February of last year, of 2022. And I was talking with my daughter was due February 18th of 2022. And my in-laws were up, you know, waiting for the baby to be born. And I had 3 months off. I was going to help out at home, you know, while she was being born and stuff. And we'd been on the road nonstop, basically. So I was coming back down, and this is my office down here. And I'd come down here every morning before everybody was up and try to work.
Yeah.
And I was just coming up with garbage. And I think it was because of all the pressure I had on me. And I just didn't know really how to deal with that. And one night, my father-in-law and I were up after my mother-in-law and my wife had gone to bed, and we were up having drinks, and he was like, you know, what's bothering you? I can tell, you know, something's wrong with you. You're not acting normal. And, you know, I told him everything that was going on with work, and he kind of told me exactly what I needed to hear to kind of put myself back into that free space that I'd existed in for the past decade of just, you know, I do this because I love it. And it just so happens I get to do it for money and for work. The whole point, the reason why I write songs though, is because I love it and it's therapeutic for me. Yeah. And he just kind of reminded me that, you know, this is what I was put on this earth to do, is write songs. It's what I've always done. It's what got me here. And that's the only thing that I have control over anyway. So don't worry about any of the other stuff. Just write songs.
Yeah.
Just follow your heart, write your songs. And if the other stuff works out, great. And if it doesn't, it ain't going to be any worse than where you're at now. And he reminded me, he's like, where you're at right now is pretty good. Like, everything's working out fine. Just keep going. So that's, you know, I it's weird. Sometimes you just need to hear it from somebody else, even though the solution to some situation in your life really isn't rocket science. That was the case there. So I went down the next morning and I wrote 2 Weeks Gone, which ended up being on the album. And then from there I was like, okay, like, I'm going to write about my family this year because I just feel like that's what I need to do to get myself back on track and centered. So that's kind of how that all came to be. And wow. I didn't think about, you know, I know it's not the most popular thing for somebody to make an album about family or whatever, but that I didn't really care. That's just kind of where, when I got back into that free space creatively where I was just following my heart and going wherever, you know, that's just where it led me.
Well, look, you know, I think it's important to note for folks who have yet to listen to that, I'm gonna hope you all listen to this, that this is not some kind of like cheesy, like folky thing about how this is like, you captured the primal reality of being in a family. That's what I loved about it. There is an edginess to your album that really captures, I think, an aspect of being a parent that just doesn't get brought up that much. It's a mystical experience. It's a confrontation with mortality. It's a confrontation with your own, like, oh God, what's your song? What Would You Do? The one about the flood. It's like, you know, those moments when you realize as a parent, it's like, hey, you can't be a coward here. Like, these babies depend on you. You have to be willing to die for them and for your family. And, you know, that I think that's a self-interrogation. Like, you know, I ask myself that sometimes if I'm slipping a little bit. It's like, hey, no, you can't slip anymore. This isn't about you anymore. And, you know, so you're capturing, like, that angle of being a parent and family life. So it's like, it really, the album has this edge to it that I just love. It's such a, also these days, and maybe I'm just saying this because I am a parent and I want to be cool, which is a sad, sad desire to want to be cool. You, what's wrong with you? You're 49. You're not cool. But
no,
you know,
dude, honestly, man, anybody that thinks they're cool ain't shit. Like,
you aren't shit.
You know what I mean? You ever see that person that, like, you can tell that they think they're cool?
There's nothing
lamer than seeing somebody walk in a room thinking they're better.
The cool guy. Oh, here comes the cool judgmental piece of shit.
But I do think
that there, these days, there is something more punk rock about having a family than there's been in a long time. You know, I think you hit a moment in time where an album like that is edgy, is punk rock, is subversive, which is weird.
That's against the grain now. I'm right there with you, man. I think you'll see, you know, I announced the album, I think it was August 4th when it was announced, and made it very clear, you know, what it was going to be about and what it is. And I think you'll see a lot more of that going forward. And I think you already seen, like, especially in country music, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of that, and good. because it and there wasn't much of it before, that's for sure. And no. So that's a good thing, man. If it makes some kids that are coming up that, you know, are listening to the music realize, hey, it's not uncool to find somebody that you love and settle down with them and have a family. You can do that, right, and also have a career. Then that just makes it a better society, because there's, you know, imagine a whole society full of folks that are like 60 years old that never settled down with the one that was right for them, and then never had a family, and then they're miserable about it later on in life. Imagine a whole town full of that. And that's kind of where, you know, popular culture was kind of pushing that's where things are headed in the future. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of disagree. I think that would just lead to a bunch of folks regretting a lot of things in their past.
Or just like banging their sex robot in some like weird techno apartment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, this is incredible. Oh, yeah, God. You know, it's so weird. I'm only being slightly hyperbolic. I really think that's the future we're headed towards is, you know, like at some point, people are going to realize, shit, I'm lonely. You know, so like, you know, a lot of, you know, I'm sorry, this is a rather dark to say, when you get really older, there's die-offs. You know what I mean? And so like your friends, my teacher's teacher, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, told him, you know, when you get to a certain age, your friends start dropping like flies. So like that's happening. But then there's another version of that, I guess, in middle age, where your friends start doing like marry offs. They're not dying, but they're like, now they got a family. There's no more time for whatever the thing was, or going to the shows or the festivals. Like, you're in the forge of life now. I want to go out with my friends. I'd love to go blast rails of ketamine at Burning Man and, like, you know, freak out, but I can't. Like, that's not happening. I can't. That's just not happening. It's done.
Yeah.
But some people, you know, they hold on. And they're able to continue that. I'm not judging that. Maybe they made the right choice. I don't know. But at some point.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with the person that's truly what they want. I guess I'm just saying that, like, there might have been and hopefully things will correct itself in society. It tends to be that way.
Yes.
Usually the way things go. But like for the thing of a teenager to just be like to just have the idea in their head that it's not cool for that to maybe be their future when they're in their later 20s or 30s. It's like, whoa, 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 don't write that off unless you really get out there and live a little bit and know yourself and decide, hey, that's not what you want. Then that's fine. But yeah, when you got like a young person who just thinks, oh, it's not cool to like marry the love of your life and like have kids. It's like, you know, you might realize you might be better if you get that in your life. Cause then it gives you something, it can make you better. And I think it made me better with time management, determination to succeed that I may not have had, you know, when I was single.
No way.
So
no way.
Everybody's different, but I totally get your point where, you know, the theme of the album is a little bit punk in today's society where, you know, I'm basically saying, hey, I want all these things and, you know, I got no shame in it. And, you know, maybe I ain't the cool guy in the room, but I don't really give a shit.
No, that's what's so, to me, that's like, it's exactly what I think needs to be out there right now. And you're right. It's a tragedy. And I look back at like my phase of like, you know, looking down, like, you know, you just, when you're younger, at least when I was younger, you really think you know everything. Like you think you've gotten it figured out. It's just part of being young is you're like, I've got this. Like, I know I've taken the classes, read the books. I know what's going on here. You really, at least I was dumb enough to believe that. And then also I think within that is like, you think you have more control over things than you have. Like, you know what? You think you're not like, cause when I met my wife, I knew the cheesy thing you hear people say, I knew we were going to get married. And I'd heard my cheesy ass friend say that and was like, shut the fuck up. You don't know that. And I just knew, like, it was like I shifted out of time or something, you know? It's like, oh, what? Like, it's like, I'm in a tsunami. Like, there's no, this is big. Yeah. This is bigger than me. And
dude,
so
I was the same boat, man. I remember.
Really?
Yeah. And I met my wife and I had asked her out, like, cause we first met after I just finished playing music. And I think that that gave her an aversion to me.
Yep.
With the fact that I'm trying to go out with her, like, after the show and stuff. So she really made me, like, work for it, like, cool. to even go on a first date. But anyways, yeah. I remember, like, before she'd even agreed to go on a first date with me, looking at a picture of her and just being like, man, I'd marry that woman.
Yep.
So I know exactly what you mean by the feeling. It's just, I don't know how to explain it, but there's just a thing there. It's like a biological thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and you look at your baby, like my wife will be like, you know, when our DNA met, it's like, we're going to make some awesome babies. Like it just knew. It's like, okay, whatever, your personality and all that bullshit. You're making babies now. That's what's happening. And what is cooler than that, though? I mean, it's like, yes, hedonism is fantastic. Big fan, was a big fan. Love sense gratification, big fan. But that pales in comparison to like sending, continuing you're sending DNA into infinity. You know what I mean? Like you're growing branches of your family tree. Like all those people who sacrificed their lives so that you could be breathing air. You know what I mean? It wasn't for nothing. Like it's you're continuing it. It's moving forward. You become like you're collaborating or something with it sounds so cheesy. It sounds like the name of the worst book ever. You're collaborating with the divine. You're like part of God's like exhalation into the world or something. And what's cooler than that?
Yeah. And it's like an extension of the timeline of that the effect of a life can have on the earth in a positive, you know, in a positive way.
Yeah.
Cause you know, most folks, when you're a parent, you're setting out to make good human beings.
Yeah.
And you know, oftentimes I believe that is the case. You know, most folks grow up being pretty good folks and, you know, good leads to more good. And yeah, I think that's the way that this world can improve. It's not about people deciding not to have any more children than just being a fall off in population like a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully it's good people like raising more good people and that going down generations, you know, down the line, you know, because
right.
I mean, you just look at, like the long, you know, look at like the grand scheme of human history here. And you look at like how bad things were in the ancient world and the dark ages, middle ages. And like, even the World War I, World War II, like, it, even though things aren't perfect now, things do get better. And I think the way that's happened is by good people raising good humans, and those good humans get a little bit better and they raise a little bit better ones. And like people get better over time. I mean, how else can you explain why aren't we just all hacking each other to bits all the time
right
now, like we were for thousands of years? It's because it's a gradual improvement of humanity, I believe.
Yeah, it was the purge. Not that far back, it was the purge. People were torturing people like as a sport. You would just like capture a heretic, throw him in a cage, and just like see what happens if we put scorpions on his nipples. No thought of like this is fucked.
Yeah. You know, strap somebody to chains to see if they float or sink.
Yeah,
and if they sink, at least they're not a witch. And if they float, they're a witch. We're gonna kill them. It's like you're screwed. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know what I mean? And that was 2 centuries ago. You know, it's like 4 people ago. It's not really.
Yeah,
it's crazy. You
it's
know?
Crazy to think about that. And you know, this guy back here, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, was a famous Tibetan Buddhist teacher. In one of his books, he said, "If you really want to help society, forget about whatever your ism is. You know, whatever it is—socialism, communism, capitalism, anarchism, whatever your thing is. Forget about the isms, and find harmony in your family." This is how you will improve the world, is by bring harmony to your family. And it's just what you're saying. It's like if you know, we can do that. And let me tell you, sometimes that's not easy, bringing harmony to your family. Sometimes it's impossible to, you know, in the chaos to find peace. But you learn. That's how it's made me a better person, because it's training. It's like training in like how to bring calm. You know what it is. You have toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
It's madness.
Like, yeah, you're like constantly trying to self-correct, you know, yourself. You're like like, hey, don't get so frustrated here. Like, yes. Calm down. Like, you know, yeah, it's like daily, you know, it's
every
daily
day.
trying to like self-improve, you know, dealing with just the normal ins and outs of life.
Yeah.
And stuff.
You can't, like, with a toddler, I take him to a martial arts class, and the teacher said the funniest thing. He's like, you know, sometimes people yell at other people to be quiet. Like, you're yelling at your kid, you got to be quiet. You're being too loud. And you're screaming. Like, you know, so you have to learn how to tune it down, man. You can't yell at someone to be quiet. That's telling them if you want something, yell. So it's like taming that part of yourself. I am so happy to have met you. And I, like, you are... I already thought you were going to be the coolest person ever. You're 100 times cooler. Not to insult you based on the cool comment. I mean, real cool. Not like bullshit cool.
Oh, I appreciate that, dude. Yeah, I did. You know, I know, like, yeah, I'm always self-conscious about how I do on these things, you know.
You are a wonderful person, wonderful musician. You have given a real gift to all of us with your music. And I know that's a cheesy thing to say. I mean it. I do not find music anymore that I like. I always revert to the Grateful Dead. It's pathetic. So to have your music now on my playlist that I can connect to when I'm on the road missing my family, and it's just wonderful. I just really am grateful to you, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Duncan, man. It was a cool surprise, like, just getting that message from you saying that you dug the music. I've been listening to you for years, so we were sitting in the we were doing the Apple sessions down in Nashville, and I got like an alert on my phone from my email to like email me that somebody messaged me, and I saw that, and I was like, dude, I was showing the guys, like, this is the coolest thing ever, like, check this shit out, you know. So thanks
that
for having
makes
me on,
me
dude.
So yeah. Happy
I appreciate the hell out of it,
man. Can you tell people, or do you have shows coming up right now? You're saying you what's going on?
Yeah, I'm touring pretty solid through to the end of the year. CharlesWGodwin.com, and you know, most of them are sold out, but I think there are some here and there that there are some tickets available too. And if any of them ever work out that you want to go to, you know, just let me know.
Are you coming to Austin anytime?
I'm playing in New Braunfels in October, two nights in a row at Green Hall, which is like, I think it's like 20 minutes down the road, but it's like it's like a classic. It's one of like the standard country venues. It's a big milestone type of venue. And I got two nights there here. It's like October 21st and 22nd, I think.
Do you know what days those are?
I think it's like a Friday and a Saturday. And I'm doing that big Highway 30 Fest up in Dallas before all that. I think it might be the first day of that festival up there.
Praying I'm not on the road. Hang on, man. Let me just look. Sorry, guys, while I like selfishly look at my schedule so I can go to a show. Let me just look at this real quick. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, I'll be
I'm in town. Thank you, God. I'm there, man. I would love to come. And
yes, Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd, Green Hall. If you want to come, just let
Thank
me know.
You. I'll let you know. And folks, please, all the links you need to find them are going to be at DougAtrussell.com. If you can't remember this, I'm telling you, dive in. You are going to be so happy that if you haven't already discovered him, that it's the best. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Dude, thanks for having me on, Duncan.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Charles Wesley Godwin, everybody. All the links you need to find him will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Definitely check out his new album, Family Ties, and go see him live. Speaking of seeing someone live, come see me. I'm going to be at Cobb's in San Francisco the 5th and the 6th of October. After that, Helium, Philadelphia. Lots of dates coming up. I hope you guys will come and see me live. Big thank you to our sponsors, and thank you for listening. I'll see you soon. Until then, Hare Krishna.